The talk is entitled Being Fat or Having Obesity, Combining Social Constructivism and Biomedical Research on Childhood Obesity. And I planned it as a sort of, it's not a very rounded up lecture, it's more of an exploratory talk. It's a work in progress, as you will see. And I'm really keen on having a discussion with you. So I really hope that we'll have those 20 minutes or 15 minutes at the end to talk. And the goal of this talk is not to look at the multivariate causes of obesity, or at least not directly. It is rather to discuss, challenge, and look for ways to bridge the existing dichotomous, what I see as partly dichotomous perspectives on what is obesity, childhood obesity to be more exact, and what is fatness. And to some extent, the question that I want to ask and engage with today is where or what is the difference between obesity and fatness, and who has the right to decide that? And also, why is that important? So this is sort of my take on the ongoing debates on obesity and what has been happening in the field, as well as my reflection on my own journey of studying obesity. I'll tell you a little bit about that, as well as an exploration into my future research. And I cannot imagine, to be honest, a better place to discuss that than UBVO. So to give you a little bit of my background, Stanley already introduced it. So I did my PhD at SOAS already 7 years ago. And as Stanley mentioned, I studied various negotiations related to feeding children in Warsaw, which included ethnographic research with families and in primary schools, as well as within state institutions in the food industry. And I worked with children aged between 6 and 12 years old. And this will finally come out as a book next year. So if you're interested, keep an eye for that. And so I combined anthropology of food, anthropology of childhood, as well as both socialist studies and feminist scholarship to study children and food. And I very purposefully did not want to study obesity at that time, even though a lot of people asked me about it or talked to me about it. And actually, when I started my fieldwork in Warsaw in 2012, it was when the WHO research demonstrated that the rates of childhood overweight and obesity were rising with the highest pace in Poland among the European countries. So we were sort of catching up with everyone else. And it became a thing that everyone talked about. And by now, as I'll tell you in a second, those rates have slowed down. So I was sort of pushing the issue of childhood obesity away during my doctoral research. But then when I started thinking about my postdoc, that was exactly what I wanted to do. And so I very slowly moved towards medical anthropology. And now I'm doing something completely different. It's a research on embodying climate change. And although we do have a medical anthropology component because we study how heat waves and heat affect the health and well-being of older adults in two urban locations, Warsaw and Madrid. And what I particularly take from that current project, and I would like to apply to obesity studies in the future or to my own work on obesity, is true interdisciplinarity. So we combine social anthropology, quantitative sociology, epidemiology, climate science, demography, and physics. And we are mid-project, so naturally I started thinking about what to do next as my employment is related to grants. And I definitely want to go back to studying childhood obesity. It really feels like I just started scratching the surface, both in terms of doing this sort of social critical studies of childhood obesity in Poland, but also in studying childhood obesity in general through ethnography. So I'm currently in this process of thinking what to do next and how to build on my research so far. And to be honest, after finishing my previous research, I have more questions than answers, which I guess perhaps means it was a research well done. I don't know. But so to just give you a glimpse into your childhood overweight and obesity in Poland, so that you know what I'm talking about. These are the results from the COSI studies, or Childhood Obesity Surveillance Initiative, among the 8-year-olds from 2016. And I particularly like that graph because it demonstrates really well how different ways of calculating BMI percentile cutoff charts influence the rates or the statistics of childhood obesity. So as you might know, for children until 18 years old, for children and young people, you don't calculate whether they have obesity or not based on the typical BMI calculations, but you use the databases and percentile cutoffs related to their sex and to their age. And so depending on which databases and which cutoffs you use here, either according to the WHO standards, you can end up with around 30% of 8-year-olds in Poland having overweight and obesity, Or if you end up using the Polish standards, which are the OLAF ones, then it's around 20%. And those are striking differences. And I find that quite interesting because it sort of really confirms and tells us that it's very difficult to talk about objective numbers when we talk about obesity. And among those numbers, it is assumed that around 3 to 4% are children with obesity, and the rest of them would be children with overweight. So to tell you a little bit about my research so far, I did a three-year project funded by the National Science Center in Poland on the social dynamics of childhood obesity. And there were two research questions that I engaged with. One was, how and why has childhood obesity been constructed as a public problem? And then how do different actors, especially children, experience childhood obesity? And I conducted 3 years of ethnographic research in 2017-2019, which included participant observation at children's summer weight loss camps. These were commercial weight loss camps, so I attended one in 2018 and one in 2019. Participant observation of families and health professionals exchanges at two locations. One was a hospital in Warsaw, a children's hospital, and the other one was a private entity, but they provided free of charge programs for children with overweight or obesity. I conducted interviews with health professionals. So that included psychologists, nutritionists, dietitians, medical doctors, physical activity experts. These were generally people who would work with through those weight loss programs, for instance, or who would work with children with overweight or obesity. And document analysis, conference participation. All the other things basically as you do when you do ethnography, that are related to, they were related to childhood obesity. And while conducting research on obesity, it's always a very methodologically and ethically difficult terrain, I would say. And I really like the concept that Megan Warren and Jessica Gunson, the way they called it, they said it's an all-world research, right? And it's, I think, especially difficult when you do it with children. Like, it's just a completely different thing than with adults. And so because of those ethical and methodological nuances, the consequences of that were that in my research, I ended up studying only young people and families who were going through some sort of weight loss programs. That was not initially my concept. That was not my idea. But that was the only way I could actually access that group of people at that time. And in the end, my research participants were rather overweight. Very few of them actually had obesity, which is also, I think, quite interesting. So in the end, it might have not been research on childhood obesity, right? And moreover, a third point for the sort of methodological nuance, so to speak, was that while I've encountered a surprising amount of children and young people who were not overweight, but were convinced that they are fat and that they are too fat and were trying to lose weight, I basically did not meet anyone who was fat and very happy about it. And again, that's, of course, a consequence of how I framed the research project and named it as well. But it's something that I started thinking a lot about, especially in terms of doing the next project, right? That the language we use matters. And we know it, of course. But then when you use the O word, so to speak, it really matters a lot. So I started this research with a completely social constructivist perspective in mind. I was interested in how childhood obesity has been constructed as a problem, both on a social, more macro scale and on an individual micro scale. And then I started fieldwork and was often very painfully made aware of the physiology, the biology, the materiality of obesity. And here you can see photos from one of those summer weight loss camps that happened in the mountains. When I was at the summer weight loss camp, I remember very vividly walking next to Janek, a 12-year-old boy. The whole group was walking up a very small hill, and I've noticed Janek problems catching his breath. And the hills were smaller than those that you see in the picture on the right. I saw panic in his eyes, got really scared for him, and asked if he wanted to take a break. We stopped and stood for a good few minutes while others were passing us by. Janek caught his breath after a while and told me that he feels really embarrassed. He really would have loved to climb that hill easily, he told me, but his weight would not allow it. And on a different day, Adam was telling me how his feet hurt after walking for such a long time. They were indeed covered in blisters already after around a 40-minute walk. One of the summer camp counselors, who was a physical activity expert, told me that she noticed some of the young people have feet, back, or muscle deformation due to their weight, and that she really did not expect it to be so bad when she was coming to this camp. Their bodies have endured irreversible damage, as she put it. Now, these examples might be more about the physicality, the limited physical exercise, but they were also about obesity and excessive weight, at least according to the boys I talked to. And the physicality of it, the physiology and biology of these young people's bodies was undeniable. Barely catching their breath, not being able to tie one's shirts, or even stand or walk at times, I certainly could no longer think that obesity is a social construction. And even if it's socially constructed in how we talk about it, frame it, or even attempt to deal with it, as every social problem is socially constructed, its physicality and biology was very painfully showcased in front of my eyes when I spent time with the same people. And I could not deny its material, physical, and physiological existence. But what is it then? And what is obesity and where is it located? I kept thinking. And since then, I've been sort of stuck in between two different approaches to obesity, public health crisis and social constructivism. Let's call them that. And here I build a lot on Tina Moffat's article, The Childhood Obesity Epidemic, Health Crisis or Social Construction from 2010. She described it as those two camps. They have been described differently by different authors, but let's keep it like that for now. So public health crisis, seeing obesity as a public health crisis, represents the biomedical field. It's defined or described as an epidemic. The metaphor of an epidemic is often used when we relate to that thinking. And it's been defined as an alarmist perspective. So it's a lot about alarming everyone that we have this epidemic of obesity. I'm sure you're all very familiar with what I'm talking about. And the BMI measurements are often used as the main tool. And actually this I think is one of the biggest problems that we have, that we should consider, and that we that causes a lot of harm. And one thing is that it is the BMI measurements are focused only on weight, sort of assuming that obesity is only about excessive weight and always about excessive weight. And the other thing is that it conflates obesity and overweight. They're often sort of smashed together, even written them down here as one word, because they're often often perceived as one thing. And I think that there are many negative consequences to that, and I'll be talking a little bit about that in a second. And as Devry noticed, because of this conflation, overweight children are often unnecessarily pathologized when they may be just healthy and chubby. But what we consider chubby, again, is a big issue, right? And another part of that field is the domination of the heuristic of an individual responsibility and choice. So I already talked a little bit about that during my last talk at UBVO that in the end came out as a paper. And that's changing. That's definitely changing in many places, right? We talk about other perspectives on obesity, but it's, for instance, a perspective that still dominates in Poland. And then obesity is considered a disease. There should be a question mark there, but there is a code for that, right, in ICD. It's not really considered a disease formally in Poland, but it is in many other countries. Okay, and in terms of social constructivism, that builds a lot on critical fat studies, and more obesity is described as Boerhaave called it, the postmodern epidemic, and that sort of groups people that are more of skeptics in terms of actually what is obesity and whether it is a disease and who invented it, et cetera, et cetera. One of the sort of approaches connected to that field or that group or that camp would be the health at every size approach, which really is criticizing conflating health and being thin. So sort of the conflation of thinking about health and thinking about aesthetics and morality as well. And another sort of big part of what this field argues or this camp argues are the unintended negative consequences of public health programs and fat obesity discourses. Susan Greenhalgh, for instance, wrote a lot about that, how discourses around fatness or obesity actually cause a lot of harm. For instance, distorted body image. And that's a big, big problem in Poland. And here you can see a table from Health Behavior in School-Age Children report. The report was from 2020, and I think the last round of HBCC was in 2019, if I remember correctly. So this is the table that showcases young people who say that they are too fat. And Poland really holds the first place in that ranking. So among 11-year-olds, you could see that 31% of boys and 39% of girls think that they're too fat compared to the 21 and 24 for the whole group that participated in the HPCC studies, which is 43 countries. And then among 13-year-olds, it's 31% of boys and 49% of boys. And among 15-year-olds, 31% of boys and 52% of girls think that they're too fat. And if we compare that with the numbers that showcase overweight obesity, they really don't match. So I think that this is an unintended consequence of obesity discourses or fat talk, as Greenhalgh called it. And I think that I found it extremely troubling. That's something that I did not expect when entering my field work, and something that I've been looking for a way to how to deal with, because that's just astonishing to me, the number and what happens to so many young people. Okay, going back to my list, long list, another sort of perspective from the social constructivist camp is seeing fatness or obesity syndrome as always locally situated. So the need to carefully study what is obesity and fatness in each context, especially social cultural context, avoid universalizing measures and treatments, and also think of health more as a sort of diversified culturally, right? Rather than use this very dominant perspective on what is health. And so while in this public field, we have more of, in terms of tools and methods, we have more of an epidemiological analysis, statistics, and medical analysis, so things like physiological testing and anthropometry. And it's more based on evidence-based practice and replicability. This social constructivist perspective is more based on critical cultural analysis, so a lot of cultural analysis, discourse analysis, and individual storytelling, but also political ecology, and in general, I would say qualitative approaches. And I really like the way in which Emma Jean Abbott, Carinelli, and Stanley, who's present here, described the difference between those two camps in the recent paper that I read, and I'll quote in a sec as well. Is that you wrote that, and such demarcations mean that the obese body represented in mainstream public health is depoliticized, and the obese body of social scientific critic is debiologized. So we have this difference that on the one hand, it's only culture and politics, and on the other hand, it's sort of only biology, right? And of course, this is a simplification, but in general, those views, I think, remain to be dominant. And actually, I think there should be one more column added or space in between those columns, because what happens when the mainstream biomedical perspective or the public health perspective gets mediatized and enters the public sphere? And I think, for instance, a lot of what happens between the BMI measurements as the main tool and the unintended negative consequences of public health that we see on both sides happens in between those spheres, right? Because a lot of doctors or a lot of experts from the public health or biomedical field, they do not want to cause harm. They often do want to help, and they're often very worried about what they see as a problem. But something along the way happens. And when it reaches young people, so to speak, we end up with distorted body issues and other problems. And I think it's important to recognize the space in between those two fields, right? That there should be more stuff added here. And I think we also should recognize that those two perspectives not only see different causes of obesity, but actually also see obesity or weight or fatness, that's depending on what we wanna use, as completely different things. A biomedical problem on an individual scale that becomes an epidemic, or a socially constructed form of biomedical oppression. And they take very different epistemological, or even ontological approaches to obesity or fatness, and to what obesity is and what fatness is and how we can understand it. And I think that there are valid points on both sides. And of course, I assume a lot of people at UBVO would agree with me. So I'm not really saying anything that's that new for you. But I still think that how do we combine and connect them? The question of how do we combine and connect them, if they're epistemologically or even ontologically different in its basis, is a really valid one that we should still sort of keep asking and nagging at. Is obesity a biological phenomenon that should be understood and solved solved by medicine, or is it a cultural and social phenomenon that will be better understood by, for instance, social anthropologists? Well, of course, we know that it's both, and we know that we need interdisciplinary research, but I think that because of our disciplinary cages, it's very difficult to do, and that's something that I'm learning now on my in my interdisciplinary project. So what I want to take from those two perspectives in my own future research is, on the one hand, recognizing that fatness is all right, so that people are thin and fat as they are small and tall, and not pathologizing or stigmatizing it. But then also recognizing that obesity has very troubling health consequences and physical and physiological consequences, and that there is such a disease as obesity. That is in a way connected to fatness, I guess. But not every fat person has obesity, right? So how do we differentiate? And how do we find a way to talk about it, but not pathologize it or stigmatize it? To encourage positive approaches, for instance, among young people to their own bodies, while also recognizing physiological and medical consequences of obesity. So I guess my question remains, how do we move beyond these dichotomies? And I think at its basis, and that's probably not gonna come as a surprise, these dichotomies are so different because they move in between nature, culture, and macro-micro, right? So they either really base obesity in the nature or in the culture and look for solutions as well. And we've moved beyond that, and I'll tell you now how I think we've moved beyond that, but I think it's still important to recognize how dichotomous our disciplinary thinking often is, because it's very difficult to think differently, right? And also to look for solutions in a different way. But yeah, as I mentioned, there have been a lot of research that has moved forward and beyond those divides. And I'll just give you a few examples, but I'm sure there's much, much more. So this is just some ideas that I found particularly interesting. So I've been thinking about this idea of Nancy Shepherd Hughes and Margaret Locke's of a mindful body. So recognizing that their individual social and political bodies actually, and in such a way, thinking about obesity as deeply social and political and not only individual. And that perspective is connected in many respects with materiality. And so the materiality of our bodies, the materiality of our food, and hence materiality of overweight and obesity. Then a different perspective would be social cultural determinants of health. And I added cultural here because I think that's quite important to the typical SDH. And this framework focuses on the broader health inequalities stemming from wider social processes, such as inequalities in education, employment opportunities, environmental exposure to pathogens and pollution, et cetera, et cetera. I assume you're familiar with this framework. I've actually heard recently, but I can't remember where, so I didn't quote it here, that we should consider talking about social-cultural aspects of health rather than determinants, because determinants assume that it's something we cannot change, really, or it's sort of unavoidable and unchangeable. And when we talk about aspects, I think it makes it a little bit more flexible and invites the idea that we can change those things. So that's, again, something to consider. And I think part of this approach could be the thinking in terms of an obesogenic environment. So this is a problematic concept, of course, but I think it's still important because it allows us to shift the focus from an individual food practices, individual physical activity habits, to a more systematic and structural thinking. And though, as for instance, Coles and Evans demonstrated, such an approach assumes that there is something inherently problematic in bodies with obesity. So again, we have to be very careful about how we frame things, right? And how we talk about it. Then another perspective that moves beyond this dichotomy is biohabitus. And again, Sami co-wrote the paper with Megan Warren that I'm quoting here. So this approach uses, takes Bourdieu's classic concept of habitus and adds the biological reality. It refers to the interaction between the social and the biological environments in the production of obesity. And it's connected to epigenetics. So I think a research that's really booming right now, which focuses on heritable phenotype changes that do not involve alterations in the DNA sequence. But it's a growing body of literature studies how obesity can be transferred or influenced by both parents. And I mentioned both parents because it's usually focused on the mother, but Again, in a recent paper, Caroline, who I'm not sure whether it joined already or not, but she's all well known to you, co-wrote a paper that argued for fathers' involvement and considering fathers as also influencing the epigenetics of a child, which I think is a fantastic argument to be made. And then the last one is an affective political ecology of obesity. So again, the paper I mentioned by Emma Jane Abbott, Carinelli and Stanley, that takes into account, on the one hand, the ecologies and infrastructures which influence people's bodies and might cause their obesities, which are, for instance, include microbiota, but also take into account affect and how emotions play into developing experiences and dealing with obesity. And I find that focus on emotions really, really interesting. So again, as I mentioned, these are just some examples of how we've been moving forward and beyond those dichotomies. But these approaches still mainly focus on obesity, on where it comes from, on what causes it, and on many political, social, physiological, and psychological aspects of it. And a different angle I would like to take and explore, and to be honest, ask you about it, and I hope we'll have a little time for a discussion, is the difference between fatness and obesity. So sort of to ask, when does obesity start? When can we stop talking about fatness and start talking about obesity? Or does it have to be linear? Does fatness always have to become obesity? Or are those two things completely different things? So I guess my question would be, when, where, and for whom does fatness change into obesity? Under what circumstances? And certainly not every fat person has obesity. So I'm interested in the boundaries of obesity and whether in what way fatness becomes obesity. Or maybe, as I mentioned, one does not change into the other. Maybe they're completely different things and we just assume that they are one and the same. How can we reconcile the biomedical perspective, which tends to see almost any fatness as problematic, so overweight always sort of leading into obesity, and through that causes many negative consequences, such as the body distortion issues that I mentioned already. And critical fat studies perspective that question that fatness or obesity might in fact have negative health consequences for some people. There's this incredible ambivalence about how they are connected and how to deal with it. And here's, I'll show you a quote from my research from one of the mothers, Danuta, who is a mother of 16-year-old Kasia. Here's what she told me. She said about her daughter, "She's very overweight, according to medical standards. I hope she will take a critical look at herself at some point. But then I want her to accept herself. She's a big girl and she accepts it now. And I think that's good. So I'm not sure how to handle this." And I find that quote really, really striking because Danuta really moves between accepting her daughter's body and accepting the fact that she is fat as a part of her, and is actually really happy that Kasia, her daughter, is self-confident, that she accepts her body and likes her body. But simultaneously, the sort of biomedical field tells Danuta that something is wrong with her daughter because she's overweight, which likely means that she will become obese, will have obesity. I mean, I think that's how Danuta saw it, that there is a problem with her daughter. And she's quite ambivalent about how to handle that. She talks a lot about wanting her daughter to be confident and not wanting her to, you know, she didn't want to destroy her daughter's confidence and tell her that there is something wrong with her and she's too fat. But at the same time, she was worried that there is something wrong because she's overweight. So she sort of moved also between those two narratives of being fat and accepting that, or having overweight and that being a problem. And I think that that really shows how many parents and young people as well, although in my research so far, it's been many parents who've had those narratives, how they struggle with that ambivalence of promoting body positivity and liking one's body, but also realizing that overweight or obesity might cause problems for their children. And I think there's also something quite specific, as I mentioned, when working with children and young people. It is different than studying adults with obesity. And not only because children and young people are in the process of development and their bodies are very rapidly changing, but they're also much more vulnerable. Socially, psychologically, they have much fewer protections against discrimination and stigmatization that they experience in their lives. And I don't want to say that they don't have agency. I'm very far from saying that. but their daily lives and practices are often really dependent on their parents and families. So children and young people always have to be seen as this sort of, as adults actually as well, right? As a sort of part of wider community. And again, it's individually when, and methodologically when doing research, it's a different conversation about one's body and about one's practices and habits with younger people and with adults. So my thinking, in my thinking about fatness and obesity and the connections between the two, I keep thinking whether obesity is a disease, and that's a question that sort of has been with me for a while already. And there still seems to be quite a lot of confusion around it, and certainly in Poland, in medical field. Many health experts told me that they don't actually treat obesity as a disease, that they think it's a condition that can cause other diseases. And I struggle a lot with that also when asked by media at some point, right? How do I talk about it? What sort of narrative do I use about it? So that I, while taking into account also all those issues that I told you about. And so I've decided the way I've framed it so far, or talked about it publicly, is that obesity is a disease. And let's assume that for a little bit now. And I think it's important to recognize it as a disease because there is a power in giving it a name. There is a power in naming a disease, as we know from a lot of medical anthropology research. And Ellen Ersfjord demonstrated in her research with children going through a weight loss program in Norway how important it was for them to name and recognize obesity as a disease. And here's a quote from her paper. "Children changed the perception of their bodies from being fat to suffering from obesity by embracing the biopedagogies involved. Due to this transformation, obesity was made into an entity, a thing that the children could work on, which was used for coping and change." And that's why I think it's so important to talk about having obesity and not being obese. To sort of, that enables us to really recognize it as a disease and something that children have and not are, or adults have and not are. And it's a, in a similar process to what happened in disability studies, right? We no longer say that people are disabled, we say that they do have a disability. So I think that's, again, something to consider in how we frame and talk about this research, because, well, it has consequences, right? Is obesity a disease? And a different angle to that is looking at the process of diagnosis. In understanding any disease, I guess, we always have to look at how it's diagnosed. And here, I think things get quite grim because childhood obesity is still diagnosed mainly based on the BMR percentile chart. So it's, at least in Poland, that's really the only tool that's used, or one of the main one. And here is a quote from a doctor I talked to. He said, "In my opinion, obesity is a problem that is mostly in the head. It's mental, isn't it? All patients are always looking for some justification. I must have some disease because I cannot lose weight. These are the problems of the head. All those decisions about how we eat, how we are physically active. And there are just people who prefer this lifestyle for some reason. They eat a lot, they don't want to move, they enjoy it for various reasons, and it is very difficult to change it." So this was actually one of the sort of nationally recognized, one of the main doctors dealing with childhood obesity. And it reflects well the really mainstream and dominating perspective, which is that obesity is not really a disease and that people bring it on themselves, that they are not physically active and they eat badly. And, you know, while reading so many research and listening to so many talks at UBVO, for instance, as well, I'm still puzzled how things have not really moved that much in Poland, it seems. Although, to be honest, I did that research already about 3 years ago, so maybe things have changed more. But what I, why I use that quote here, I think it's really interesting that we social anthropologists or social scientists talk so much about the body and the materiality and the embodied politics of food, of obesity, of many things. But here, this medical doctor sort of just says that it's all mental and it's all in the head. And I thought that's another interesting comparison, or this dualism that we encounter so often. And another part of thinking of whether obesity is a disease is how ephemeral and uncertain it is, actually, right? And here's a quote from Ilya Gutin, who said, "Childhood obesity is a challenging diagnosis. Children's body mass index is an imprecise diagnostic of health, leading clinicians' interactions with patients and families to focus on the potential of future harm rather than the presence of infirmity or disease. This is complicated by emphasis on certainty in medical care." And Well, he has a rather positive outlook, describing how US health practitioners promote long-term physical, mental, and social health, rather than focusing on the BMI. But such an approach was, as I already mentioned, relatively rarely in Poland during my research. But I thought that what was especially interesting here is this emphasis on uncertainty, while also the need for certainty in medical care, right? So I think that this fact that obesity is so ephemeral and so uncertain and so difficult to put into any kind of boundaries, again, is an important thing to recognize, but also find a way to deal with. So finding a way to deal with this uncertainty has been a big part of my own sort of journey of studying childhood obesity. It is those blurred boundaries and uncertainty, I think, that make obesity into such a big problem as well, because it's not neatly put into boxes, right? We can't really neatly put it into one box and have it there, because it constantly moves and doesn't want to be put into one box. And this uncertainty, again, I think is something that's really recognized. So going back to this idea of ambivalence about fatness and obesity that I really want to find a way to tackle or think with or figure out, or at least try to. I think that unless we find a way to make a distinction between fatness and obesity and not treat it as two names used to describe the same thing, the same phenomenon, it might be very difficult to move forward. If we keep perceiving obesity as a disease characterized only by excessive fat, then we cannot reconcile the two. We just can't, I think. Because they're distinctive objects, fatness and obesity, aren't they? And I keep thinking that finding a way to reconcile fatness and obesity might enable us to deal with obesity without causing more harm, to encourage people to exercise and eat well while being positive about their bodies, no matter their size. And so here are some questions that I've been struggling with and that I actually would like to sort of leave out there for a discussion. How does accepting fatness come into recognizing obesity as a disease? How to engage in prevention and treatment of obesity without stigmatizing fatness? Who has the power to indicate the boundaries of fatness and of obesity, and how is it done? And how can we account for epistemological and ontological differences in studying obesity and fatness? And so sort of just very quickly to give you a sense of what I've been thinking so far with, some of the answers to those questions, very, very general ones. So sort of how to deal with this ambivalence would be to conceptually, discursively, and practically disentangle overweight and obesity. I mentioned that already, but I think that this is really a big issue. Account for varied biosocial and cultural understanding of health, and particularly disentangle the notions of health from aesthetics and thinness. Treat exercising as something we do to be active or as a form of pleasure or really spending time and not really to lose weight. Consider community approaches. There is a paper by Esther Vogel from last year, and she did research in Amsterdam, which was considered one of the successes of the childhood obesity prevention programs. Think about interdisciplinary research or do interdisciplinary research. And then create a new metaphor to move away from the epidemic. And that's, again, something I started to think about, that Moffat in her paper written in 2010 really did a great job of critically unpacking why the concept of an epidemic or the metaphor of an epidemic does not work. And I started thinking that maybe we should come up with a new metaphor. If that doesn't work, maybe we need something different and more powerful to use. But the only thing I came up with so far is the idea of thinking about childhood obesity as a wound, as a sort of something that is a problem clearly, but that is really sore and that really needs sensitive approaches, and it really needs empathy, and it really needs collaboration to deal with, because it's such a sensitive thing, rather than, you know, thinking about it in terms of epidemic and isolation and anxiety, to think about it in terms of care